This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott.
All right, put it over there. That house is next. As a matter of fact, this whole block goes.
What in the world is going on here?
Haven't you heard about the new highway project? Lady, it's going right through here. All these houses gotta go.
This is my home. I've lived here for 30 years. You can't just come and knock it down.
Actually, lady, that's exactly what we're gonna do. You got about 1 hour to pack up and get out.
Outrageous sounding, isn't it? Definitely not a scene you would imagine witnessing anywhere in the United States. I mean, even if the federal government were evoking eminent domain, there would be lots of forewarning and an opportunity to protest. However, this kind of forcible relocation is exactly what happened to the Bushmen of the Central Kalahari Game Reserve in Botswana 2 years ago. For thousands of years, the Bushmen maintained the same hunter-gatherer lifestyle, and in the 1960s, the reserve was formally set aside to protect their way of life. So for 40 years, the status quo remained. And then the government's mining company found the possibility of diamond deposits under the Kalahari. And all of a sudden, it's time to drag the Bushmen into modern society. Translation, forcible removal from their ancestral homes into resettlement camps with no opportunity for employment and no means of feeding themselves. The First People of the Kalahari, the Bushmen's advocacy group, has filed a lawsuit against Botswana's government, suing for the right of return. The case is currently being argued in front of Botswana's high court. Journalist Tom Price has been to the resettlement camps and inside the Central Kalahari Game Reserve. He wrote about it in a recent article for Mother Jones magazine called Exiles of the Kalahari. He now tells producer Kathy Golden about those experiences.
I'd been to Botswana a few years ago and heard about the Bushmen and knew about the Central Kalahari Game Reserve and actually couldn't get in. The roads were so bad, and it seemed this sort of foreign and forbidding place. I couldn't imagine who could live in there. And then I heard about a year and a half ago, through the grapevine, about the government of Botswana beginning to forcibly relocate those people outside the reserve, and I couldn't understand why. The more I dug into it, the murkier and less pleasant the story got until I felt compelled to go.
How did you approach this? How did it come about?
There was a human rights group called Survival International in London, which has been making a big stink out of this for quite some time, and I spoke with them and asked for a contact on the ground. I was put in touch with a young kid who was one of the people who was forcibly relocated. He happened to speak English, along with the local Bushman dialects, and I hired him as a translator. It was his first ever job. Getting there was, you're pretty far out on the bleeding edge when you're in the Central Kalahari. It's an 8-hour drive across the Trans-Kalahari Highway to the nearest town, where you turn off into the bush, and that is it. Once you pass the resettlement camps, there's no tarmac for several hundred miles of just deep sand. And there's no one out there, there's no services, and it's there that these people have made their home for the better part of 20,000 years until very recently.
Were you scared at all? Was there anything to be scared of?
I was. I was the first journalist to get in there in a year and a half. This story has been closely followed in Europe, not in the United States, and that's because Botswana is a former British colonial protectorate. It was the British government that in 1961 set up the Central Kalahari Game Reserve. It's an extraordinary place. It's the only place on the planet that was set up to preserve a people, not animals. It was set up expressly to preserve their hunter-gatherer way of life. They'd been pretty much left alone by their government until very recently when they started detecting the possibility of gemstones under the Kalahari, and it was almost the same time when the government of Botswana started talking about, boy, we need to remove these people out of here and we need to bring them into modern society. And that's where the story kind of breaks down. It's a very much a he said, she said. The government of Botswana says that they encouraged and facilitated the 2,500 or so remaining mostly traditional Bushmen out of their homelands into these resettlements so that they could be brought into modern society because the rudimentary services they were providing, some food for old people and orphans, and they had a couple of wells that pumped water, it was too expensive to maintain. Now, the flip side of that is that they spent about $100,000 a year on services for those people, and they've already spent $11 million on relocating them. 3 weeks after the relocations took place, which were forcible. I mean, they picked these people up and they threw them in the trucks. They tore down their huts and they said, if you don't go, we will shoot you. And I had a dozen different people tell me that. I've never heard anything but that the relocations were forcible. Nobody, even the U.S. State Department, says the relocations were forced. So they moved these people off, and then 3 weeks later, they issued mineral leases for virtually the entire Central Kalahari Game Reserve. It's basically like they were issuing them to themselves, and that's because about 4 months after independence, some miners found the world's richest diamond strike. They were from De Beers, and they made a deal with the government. We'll dig them up, and we'll sell them, and we'll cut you in for 50%. So they have this joint mining company called Debswana, the contraction of De Beers and Botswana. So basically, they were issuing the mining leases to themselves. I went into the office of the Minister of Local Government. This is the person who's responsible for taking care of the Bushmen, Minister Michael Chipinare. And in the outside office were these big pink folders marked top secret, but they weren't stamped Ministry of Local Government. They were stamped Debswana. So it's top secret diamond files in there. And then I found out why, and that's because in addition to being the Minister of Local Government in charge of indigenous people, he also happens to be on the board of directors of Debswana. Many, many government ministers hold dual positions with the mining companies. And so for them to say that there's no connection between mining and government policy, they're just so close to the tree they can't see the forest. So this was all the antecedent to what had happened when I got there. A few reporters had gone, mostly from the BBC, and had seen the wells that had been blown up and filled with sand, had seen the destroyed communities, had seen the people crying in these resettlement camps where there's no food and nothing to hunt. I mean, they gave these people cows as compensation. They're not ranchers. But interestingly enough, the dominant tribe that runs Botswana is. And I think that's a part of it, too. It's not just greed, but it's racism. The Tswana people can't understand why a people would not want to have stuff. And they have looked down on and used the Bushmen as slave labor for centuries. The Bushmen are these peripatetic hunter-gatherer nomads. And Botswana sees itself as being, and it is, the best-run country in Africa. Transparency International says that it is far and away the least corrupt country in Africa, and it's actually better than Hungary or the Czech Republic or Italy. And they take great care of their people, and they've got an excellent educational system and transportation and healthcare and all that stuff. They don't see the Bushmen as the same as they see themselves. Instead, they see them as being this backward stepchild that really needs to be dragged into the modern culture. And I think that's because when Botswana looks in the mirror and sees itself in its gleaming superhighways and high-rise office towers and shopping malls and air-conditioned theaters and Mercedes and so forth, they really don't like the image of these nomads wearing secondhand clothes that your goodwill sent over to them. So that's the backdrop against which all of this is taking place. And you've got this mostly illiterate, non-hierarchical, non-warrior-based culture, which is running up against the global mining conglomerate De Beers and its extension, the government of Botswana. And who do you think is going to win?
Tom, early on in the story, you mentioned a man named John Hardbattle. It looks like he attempted to put protections in place long before they were urgent. Did he know what was coming? Was it predictable?
Many years ago, when this first started, John Hardbattle, interesting guy. His father is an Englishman. His mother's a Bushwoman. He organized First People of the Kalahari, their advocacy group. And John saw all this coming, and he knew that his people couldn't begin to fathom what was coming their way, and tried to inculcate in them some sense of awareness of how the outside world worked, and to go to the outside world and say, you've got to pay attention. It was that attention that he helped create that, I think, slowed down what the government was doing. But, you know, it was 4 months after 9/11 that the government of Botswana, after years of saying, okay, we won't do this, suddenly rolls in with a convoy of trucks, packs these people up, and hauls them off. And it just really was off the world's radar. And now they're in these resettlement camps, these denuded wastelands where there's no jobs, there's nothing to hunt, there's nothing to forage. What there is a bar where the women end up selling themselves to make money, which their husbands beat out of them and then use to buy alcohol, and they sit and they drink and they fight and they get AIDS and they die. Botswana has 40% HIV infection rate, which is just unbelievable. But the Bushmen, because they'd been so isolated, really hadn't had any contact with it until they got relocated. And if you combine first exposure with non-existent medical care and being ripped from their ancestors' graves, which are the place of their spiritual power, the combination is just devastating. It's an awful thing to see.
Tom, at least now the United Nations has an actual organization under its umbrella that's devoted to the rights of indigenous people. So it seems awfully nervy of Botswana to do this now.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that. I had the very good fortune of being with Roy Sasana, who's the head of the First People of the Kalahari, when he went to the United Nations Commission on Indigenous Peoples and made his case. And they said that they were very alarmed by it and that it should be investigated. And I mentioned that the UN had actually sent someone there and investigated it a few years ago. And I think the words they used were that the Bushmen's survival as a distinct people was in jeopardy unless they could stay on their homeland. What's happening now is Roy Sasana is going to come back to the United States, and he's going to meet with a special assistant for the prevention of genocide with Kofi Annan. Also, there's a new group called the Indigenous Land Rights Fund, which is helping to both support the Bushmen in the lawsuit they have right now against the government in Botswana, and also to file a case in the International Criminal Court on the grounds of genocide. If you look at what's happening to the Bushmen of the Kalahari, it's not as grim or as bloody as what's happening in Darfur, but it's genocide just the same. If these people are not allowed to go back home, they will cease to exist within a few years' time, as sure as I'm breathing.
Well, I thank you for what you've done. It's fascinating, it's sad, and let's see what we can all do.
It's my pleasure, and if people want to learn more, they can go to survivalinternational.org or landrights.org.
Who's being ripped off in your community, and by whom? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Peter Moss and Tom Price are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, just go to our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.